We're up to Base Asif Part 3. Part 3. Okay, so first things, just a few touch-ups from last week. Someone brought up a very good point, that what does it even mean? So we mentioned that there was one of the biggest controversies that the Base Asif was very big part of was that he was busy with the Smicha controversy. The Smicha controversy is something that was mainly between Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav and Rabbi Levi Ibn Chaviv. So the question was, who cares? So you have smicha, so you don't have smicha. No. So nowadays it's much more weighted. But back then, what was really the debate? So what do you even gain if you have smicha? What can we then do? So the irony is, right, as an aside, parenthetically, that Tzitz Eliezer wrote a sefer, a fascinating sefer, called Hilchas Medina. And he talks about in this sefer called Hilchas Medina that, in theory, if we were to run a Jewish Medina based on Torah law, so then how would we give punishments? Who would decide? We'd have to have a court. Who would be our Supreme Court? Sanhedrin. Now, does Sanhedrin have the ability to give knossos, to give death sentences, to give jail time, malchus, right? All these penalizations, who's carrying them out? And that's a world of a difference, because the only way you're able to do that is if you have a Sanhedrin. The only way Sanhedrin has any weight is if they have smicha. So do we have smicha? So nowadays, you know, with the government and the Supreme Court, it doesn't make any difference, because they're the governing body. And back then, it didn't make that much of a difference, but that was the give and take. If we have smicha, and we can reinstate it, so this is a world of a difference. We're going to bring back Sanhedrin that has weight, that has teeth. That's a big deal. That's why Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav brought it back. Again, Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav from Tzfas, he was from Spain, and then he moved to Mitzrayim. The Beis Yosef actually on his journey to Tzfas, actually went through Mitzrayim. So there's a little, not so much clarity as to when he became a Talmud of Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav. Some claim it was while he was in Mitzrayim. It was about a year that he was in Mitzrayim, on his way to Eretz Yisrael, eventually settling in Tzfas. And that was the Smicha controversy. And again, the Sefer, there's a whole Sefer written on this, again, hundreds of years ago already, called Kuntres HaSmicha. Smicha Sekenim, also known as Kuntres HaSmicha, goes through the entire thing. Okay, now, here we go. We're going to get into the Sefer of Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch and how it was received. So, the coolest part about history and about the procession and the evolvement of halacha is every single generation is going to be a few more works. And they really make their mark. And at the time when they come out, everyone in their generation is their contemporary. So we now are looking back in hindsight, in retrospect, saying, wow, you can't touch something the Rama said, right? Us Ashkenazim. And for the average Sephardi, and most Ashkenazim as well, unless the Rama disagrees, you can't even, you know, reckon with the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch. What he says is non-negotiable, right? But if someone who is your counterpart came out, so, you know, it's very nice. You're a chashav yid, that's so special. And I am too. So, you know, pick your rabbi, pick your beard, pick your whatever. It's a very hard thing. We're looking in hindsight, right? So in every generation, there were the mechabrim of their generation who went and wrote Shulchan Aruch, and then also wrote Rama and his elder, which we're going to get to. He's going to have his own week. He was a very, very strong personality, the Marshal, Reb Shlomo Luria, who was actually a cousin of the Arizal. Luria? Yeah? So he did not mince any words. He was very vocal about his opposition to both the Rama, his cousin, and the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch. And then as you go through generations, you have it at every single step, right? To have something undisputed within the Jewish world is a feat. So now it's undisputed, but at that time it wasn't. So again, as you just like move forwards and you think about it, then there was that whole next generation. The Marshal was part of the Ramah and the Beis Yosef, early 1500s, mid 1500s. Then you get the 1600s, going to get the Bachs, right? The Bach, the Taz, the Shach, the Magen Avraham, and they all cross paths. And suddenly, the Megine Shloima, the Rebbe of Heschel. We're going to get to all these different people, yeah? Who warrants the term the Rebbe Reb? Ever thought about that one? There's a few of them, yeah? Rebbe Yonason Eibshitz, the Rebbe of Yonason, yeah? The Rebbe of Yonason, the Rebbe of Heschel, yeah? So, and also, how come he doesn't have any Svarim that we know of? The Shach was a Talmud of his. Chanukas HaTorah, he had Chanukas HaTorah, and I didn't even know this. 150 years ago, it wasn't in print. He lived 400 years ago. Ah, that's the question. So like all good topics, there's definitely what to talk about. And then you had that whole string. Nothing. No. That's Kapishnitz. That's Abraham J. Heschel, who was a, he was a tremendous, prolific writer, poet. He was super miyuchis. He was part of his mother was the Novominsky Rebbe's sister, and he went to University of Berlin and totally left his fold and was a tremendous writer. He was in the 1900s. He was a counterpart with Rabbi Soloveitchik in Berlin with the Rebbe, with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. They were all in Berlin with Rabbi Huttner. Yeah, so that was 1900. We're talking.
And the Rav.
The Rav, Rabbi Yashaber, was in Berlin, that whole crew. And Wolfson, he was a professor in Harvard. There's good books about this stuff. So, when you get to the Beis Yosef, obviously you're going to go and you're going to find that people were not happy. Now, what were they unhappy with? Now, again, this is borderline pure academia because it makes no difference, right? I'm not a fan of academia because it really has no value, but it definitely puts things in perspective. Right? It's just perspective and almost nothing more. Because when you want to go and you're going to go and try to tackle a halachic sugya, and you're going to come out with your own conclusions, right? You read the intro to Igros Moshe, and Moshe Feinstein goes and tells you, you know, I'm not really writing Igros Moshe to be a halacha sefer, because every person can just go and learn through the sugya and they should paskin for themselves. Right. So, in theory, you should. In theory, we should all be equipped and all be able to go from top to bottom and come out with your own opinions. And then you're going to butt heads with the Shulchan Aruch. What do you do then? So the people in the 1600s, the Nisei Kalim had the same issues, and they already folded. Because whatever he says, it's the bottom line, and it's accepted. And as we said last week, the Rama really had a nice hand in that. And the Marshal, one of the big, big opposers to the Shulchan Aruch, felt, and even he was not so happy with the Beis Yosef even, felt that it was not properly done because he was very into Iyun. They said, again, all these topics of going slow, going fast, you know, crawling, yeshivas that just crawl through a masechta, and the yeshivas that cover ground, these are age-old discussions. There's nothing new. Ein chadash tachas hashemesh, the Marshal, they claim, spent a year and a half. He writes in one of his akdamas, he spent a year and a half on half of ksubas. That sounds like the yeshiva system of today. Exactly, right? Depending on what system you're from, again, we're all stuck in our whatever we're used to. But so he was very unhappy that the Beis Yosef did a big disservice. Number one, it wasn't, even the Beis Yosef wasn't as be'ian as necessary, number one. And number two, Shulchan Aruch is a travesty. Because lest someone open up the Shulchan Aruch and actually paskin. Why? Because he won't know his head from his tail, and you don't. Because if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and you don't know anything, so yeah, you'll know practical halacha, but any deviation from the very exact case that the Shulchan Aruch gives, you're at a loss. You have no frame of reference, you have no reasonings. It's just dry halacha. So that's why the Marshal was very nervous. And again, there's a Marsha. The Marsha was the next generation, also the same generation as the Shach, Magen Avraham, Bach, Taz. The Marsha, whose name was? Reb Shmuel Edels Halevi. Moreinu Harav, Reb Shmuel Edels. Who was Edel? Either his mother-in-law or his adopted mother, his stepmother. Two different versions. And there's a lot of Gedolim, actually.
And who's the Marshal?
Marshal was Reb Shlomo Luria. The Yamshel Shlomo, who also wrote Chacham Shlomo. He's going to get his own week. The Marshal might not. We'll see. So if we're going to stick in the strictly Poskim, we're going to have he'll be down the line. So the Marshal actually writes in Shabbos that someone who paskins without knowing the entirety of a sugya, he's from the Mahavle Oilam. He's literally destroying the world. Why? Because it's a travesty. It really is, because you don't even know what's going on. You don't even know the background. You don't even know the reasonings. And you're just going to say, open it up and say, oh, it says this. So then when this new case arises, and there are always new cases, there's new technologies that arise, you need to know the background in order to say a psak. Because you can't even mimic and mirror what you've had. So that was the Marshal's issue. The Marshal's issue was that it's going to be, you know, too dry. And he took issue with his cousin as well, the Ramo, which we're going to get to next week. He wrote a sefer called Teres Achatos, which was a sefer on Isser Veheter, spanning, you know, Inyoni, Basra Chalav, Taruvis, and the like. And he also was very, very upset. Yeah. The Maral's brother, you'll apologize. There's no way not to do this without tangents. The very nature is one tangent to the next. The Maral's brother, Reb Chaim, right? The Maral was Reb Yehuda Lowy, the Rav in Prague. So his brother was Reb Chaim. He was his older brother. He was a counterpart of the Rambo. Actually writes very, very sharp. These Gedolim did not hold back. And he writes that, the Rama appropriately named his sefer Teres Chatos because it's definitely causing a Chatos. Wow. Right, so you hear these type of things, it's like, wow. So, nevertheless, that's why this whole conversation is a moot point because they still were accepted. And they still go and form the halakha as we know it. And that, as we mentioned last week, is just indicative of a high level of Siyata Deshmaya. That even though there was opposition, and they definitely weathered through a lot, both during their lifetime and afterwards, Hashem oversaw. There were many Sfarim that were written that were not widely accepted. And there definitely is a Siyat Hashem. So that's the opposition. And a few klalim. They were mentioned in the first year, just a few klalim in Beis Yosef. As we mentioned, there's always the big three. The Chida writes that the Beis Yosef, when he quotes Rishonim, he always reckons with three main shitas: the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. Now those three, he will give a lot more respect to over other ones. And in those three, he'll usually take two and side with two over one. And if he doesn't, that's already room for discussion. And otherwise, if he doesn't have those three to deal with, he usually will stack, which sounds a little funny, but he will. He'll take Rishonim. He takes Ashkenazi Rishonim as well. He doesn't discriminate. He takes Ashkenazi Rishonim. He doesn't give the same weight to the Mordechai and the Tosfos like the Rama does, but he definitely quotes. Sefer Atrumas was Ashkenazi. The Rabbeinu Yerucham was Ashkenazi, right? The Rimilunil was Ashkenazi. He was the Archas Chaim. And he quotes all of them. And then takes them all into account and says, seemingly, we're going to go like this. Which again, like we mentioned, opens up already, you know, a little Pesach into why did he pick that? But, again, it doesn't really matter. I hate to sound like a broken tape recorder, but it doesn't really matter because whatever the halacha is, you have to have a lot of basis and a lot of other opinions in order to negate something Shulchan Aruch writes. Fine. That brings us to the Rama. The Rama then goes and says that the Rama then goes and writes his pirish, and he wrote a responding pirish, right? The Beis Yosef, just again, he wrote Beis Yosef on tour, then Shulchan Aruch. Again, the exact order, if I'm not mistaken, I think Kesem Mishnah may have come first. Kesem Mishnah, he felt there was a need that the Rambam, there was no one pirish that spanned the entirety of the Rambam. The Magad Mishnah does not cover the entirety of the Rambam. The Kesef Mishnah does. the Kesef Mishnah does, and there's also a Sefer Matas Melech, a relative of Chazan Davis. So there's the Kesef Mishnah is literally where it all began, and he was going through the Rambam and then works it through to Beis Yosef, to Shulchan Aruch, and then Magid Meisharim was his Sefer. Now the Ramah went, and this is just a prelude to the Ramah. The Ramah went and wrote his Darkei Moshe on the tour.
Is that in response to Beis Yosef?
No, it was not in response. It was his own separate Pirush, and generally you'll see he, if I'm not mistaken, he had a Beis Yosef already. He was younger than a Beis Yosef. He must have had a Beis Yosef because he pipes up with the Ashkenaz Rishonim that the Beis Yosef does not entertain. Because he has a clear agenda that us in Ashkenaz, us in Poland, in Germany, we have a different Mahalach HaPsach than the Beis Yosef, so we're going to and accept whatever he did say and lay down, but not everything. Then he wrote the Darkei Moshe, and then after the Darkei Moshe came, he then wrote Hagois on Shulchan Aruch, and he also wrote Teres Chatas, and he wrote a few other Sfarim, which we're going to get to in the week of the Ramah. And that, in a nutshell, again, we didn't do so much, but definitely we covered most of the Beis Yosef. He lived late into his 80s, which was quite a long life. Had multiple wives, I don't believe at the same time, which again is not such a, I don't know if that was, he didn't have Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom in Sephardi lands. Up until, in my friend of mine, an Iraqi said, in Baghdad, 100 years ago, polygamy was still normal. It wasn't frowned upon. They didn't have Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. What?
And Hebrew as well.
I never heard that. But possibly it could be, yeah. I would want to confirm that. And he had multiple wives, and many of his sermons were printed by one of his sons, Yehuda, who was literally 60 years or 70 years his father's younger, from a fourth wife or something. So when you, Beis Yosef's son, when you see some of the years when it was printed, it's literally 120 years after, 100 years after Beis Yosef lived, printed by his son. That's the reason why. So there's the Beis Yosef, Beis Yosef Cairo, and he's in Shama Shavaliyah. We should be able to glean what we can.